Olsen fakes it for pass in zone. Yes, touchdown to Greg Olsen. Wilson just got it away. There's Keith Lee. Touchdown, Carolina.
Welcome to the Keep Sounding Podcast. This is Brian, joined by Brad and John, as always. Brad, how are you doing?
I am here, Brian. How are you?
I am also present.
This ties into our conversation last week? About when you ask somebody how they're doing?
Yeah.
And the bell curve of responses?
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah, I'm not okay or fine. So
he's here.
Everything's
so
going.
We need to really check in on Brad off the air.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Get him some therapy.
Brad, yes, you do.
Yes. I'll take two therapies, please.
Two of your finest therapies, please. Thank you. John, how are you?
I'm fine.
Good. Very abrupt fine.
Yes.
Way you said
the
that.
Most, I'm the most fine.
I am the most fine. Thank you. So, as an aside, there was no B&B reaction show this week. Part of it was because Brad was feeling under the weather. Part of it was because I just can't stand losing to the Saints at all.
Mentally under the weather after losing to the Saints.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, every other game that the Panthers lost this year, I was like, oh, that was pretty close. That's cool. But the Saints, I don't care how bad the Panthers are. Losing to them infuriates me. Like,
yeah,
it's just, it ruins my mood for the whole day. Usually part of the next day as well. Like, people were talking about football at work, and they were like, oh, how'd the Panthers do? And I was like, meh. They're like, oh.
I mean, it wasn't that bad, but.
Do people that follow football like have to ask like how the Panthers do? So you have an ESPN app, man. You just pull it up.
You'd be surprised because part of it is that I'm in Philadelphia / Pittsburgh area, so none of them fucking care about the Panthers. Like,
yeah, I know.
The only time they've ever cared about the Panthers was when the Panthers were good. So, like, they sure knew how the Panthers did when they were going 15-1, but like this year they're like, oh, is Cam Newton still on the team? I'm like, fuck you.
Well, I'm just saying, like, from my personal experience, like, if I were to ask somebody, like Lions game go, I'd be like, well, that was quite a game you had. You know, I already know what happened. I know how it went.
Yeah.
The questions are about your reaction to it.
Yeah, no, they don't look at that. Panthers are irrelevant to them here. So,
And briefly, not to get too far off the subject, but to get it out of the way, there will also be no B&B reaction show on Thursday because I'm not young enough to stay up that late to record a post game reaction show for Thursday night football. I still am trying to figure out how I'm going to stay awake to actually watch the game. So, and you know, having to get up and go to work the next morning, it's not going to be tenable for me. So we'll just not do it again this week. So for those of you who are dying for the B&B reaction, so I'm sorry.
It's a long hiatus.
Yeah, it's fine. We can always just do one we can always just do one over the weekend or something if people really want to hear it.
Yeah, we can do that.
But yeah, the Panthers played a football game, which we haven't discussed at all, so we'll do a little bit of that. So they lost to the Saints 27-24. It was a pretty good game. I mean, objectively speaking, obviously, like I said, it still infuriates me watching the Panthers lose to the Saints. But, overall it was a close game throughout almost the entire game. You know, the Saints only led by at most 11 points at any one point. Panthers tied it up in the third quarter, and then the Saints won a 43-yard field goal. The Panthers definitely had chances to win the game, which has been kind of the kind of the story of the season, which is that the Panthers are playing a lot better than we expected, but they're not quite good enough to pull out like 9-10 wins, I would say. But they're going to be competitive in probably every game they play this season. Which is a lot better than any of us could have expected. Also, Joey Sly almost hit, what was that, the record tying field goal?
It would have been the record.
The record is 64.
65-yard field goal, and he missed it by maybe a yard.
So
yeah, it would have been good from 64. Like, it was off by like 2 feet.
What I learned from that is that the human cannot kick a ball more than 64 yards, because that's clearly the limit of how far a football can travel in an NFL game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was indoors with no weather, no nothing like that, nothing affecting it in any way. So that was, to me, that was peak kicking.
Yeah, I mean, it was right down the middle, too. Like, it wasn't even like it was wide right or wide left. He kicked it right down the middle.
I legitimately thought he made it at first.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it went straight, I was like, oh, dang, he might have that.
Because they were showing the behind the goalpost angle on TV, and it was straight down the pipe. And I'm like, oh, holy shit, he actually made it. And then they said no good. And I'm like, well, how short was it? And then they showed the replay, and I'm like, damn, he literally almost made it. Like, the ball just about hit the crossbar. That's how close it was.
And the saddest part about that is the only reason they attempted that field goal was because Teddy Bridgewater took a sack on third down.
Oh.
Yeah.
Apparently, it was Seth Roberts' fault, according
sack.
To... That was the play that...
That wasn't Seth Roberts' fault. That wasn't the play. Okay. It was when Teddy had to scramble for like 5 yards or something that. But Seth Roberts ran the wrong route, and if he would have ran the correct route, he would have been wide open for a touchdown.
Yeah.
So that's why he got cut.
That's probably part of it.
But I love the... I know it doesn't seem gutsy to kick a field goal, and the win probability thing that makes no sense, said that it made more sense to go for it on 4th and 18. But I love just the gusto to just be like, hey, Joe, you can bomb it. Go out there and give it a shot.
Yeah, I love that too. Because, I mean, his other option was to go for it on 4th and 19.
Yeah.
Or punt. And
well, punting
you couldn't
is out of
punt
this.
Because
yeah.
we haven't stopped them all day. They were, 12 of 14 on third down. If you punt, you're losing. Like, you're not getting the ball back. And I doubt they're going to pick up 20 yards. So it was really his only option. And I'm glad he did it, because I don't think Ron Rivera would have kicked it.
I don't
think
he
would have kicked it. It would have just been a punt.
I don't think very many coaches would have the – just like –
Yeah,
coaches.
Most
I feel like
coaches I think would have just went for it on fourth down.
Yeah, I think most coaches like in the NFL tend to not do things that have not been done. Like they kind of, it's very, you know, go by the book, so to speak.
Yeah,
and I don't know how many coaches would be like even see it as an option to kick a 65-yard field goal with 2 minutes left in the game. Like that's only something you do at halftime or at the end of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I mean, I honestly think that Matt Rhule just wanted to see if Joey Sly had the leg in him. Like, I think that he just wanted to know.
Matt, we're down by 5. What are you doing? He's like, we're in the right spot.
I just want to see if he can kick it. I just want to see if he can kick it.
Joey's feeling it today, and we're running out of time.
Yeah. like you said, I liked it. I thought it was cool. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a game flow perspective, it was their only option as well, because as you guys alluded to, the Panthers' defense could not stop the Saints consistently. Like, they managed to stop them a few times in the red zone and obviously forced some turnovers, but when the Saints were ready to start grinding out clock, they were going to do it, and that's exactly what happened. That was another thing that infuriated me about that game, is that the Saints moved the ball very easily, which, you know, that's just because the Panthers' defense isn't that great from top to bottom just yet. So that's part of it.
You know what made me the most angry the entire game? And it was kind of the difference between winning and losing. And aside from our third down defense, which didn't exist, was the drive at the end of the first half where Drew Brees went the entire length of the field with like 30 seconds to go in the half, and they scored a touchdown.
Yeah, it was like the only time he threw the ball more than like 5 yards in the air too. I'm just like, Drew's going to have to actually throw it deep, and then we're still like, now we're still not going to cover him.
Yeah, that drive made me angry.
Yeah, that was frustrating. I think that was the frustrating thing. I don't know, but there's something about, and it's very Saints of them, but them to just to pick up like 6 and 7 yards every play, like no big plays, but no small plays. And they just always are getting first downs.
Yeah,
it's so frustrating to watch. Because it also just, like, ruins the flow of the game because there's no back. Yeah. It's just like, oh, Saints gain of 7. Oh, Saints gain of 6. Saints gain of 8. And it just does that. We just watch that for 15 minutes.
Yeah, they ran, like 65, 70 plays on offense. And we
67.
Ran like 67, and we ran like 40.
Yep, 43. I mean,
we just didn't have any opportunities to do anything because of what John just said. You know, they just move it 5 yards at a time down the field.
Yeah, they outpossessed the Panthers by almost over 9 minutes, even though they had the same amount of drives.
Yep, it's honestly an almost a miracle that we only lost by 3 points, to be honest.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, the time of possession didn't. The thing about it was the Panthers are faster with the ball. Like, we had the explosive plays and stuff, which, you know, I don't think anybody's going to say, hey, man, I know that 80-yard touchdown was great, but maybe next time, like, take 15 more plays to do that same exact
ball. Yeah, we scored a 75-yard touchdown in, what, 3 plays?
We had the one, the 74-yard touchdown to DJ Moore, which I haven't.
Yeah, how many plays do we run on that drive before that throw? Was that the only play of the drive?
No, it wasn't the only play, but it was like the second or third, yeah.
Yeah, so there's your 8-9 minutes difference right there.
Yeah. I do have something about that I thought was kind of funny. I'm pulling it up real quick. But DJ Moore, that was the second play. We got 1 yard on the first play.
Okay.
And then 74 yards on the second play. So DJ Moore coming in, he broke a little bit of a cap he had on himself. So before the game on Sunday, he had scored 8 touchdowns in his career. 4 of them were from within 15 yards of the goal line, like most typical touchdown places. The other 4 were between 51 and 57 yards.
That's
actually a cool stat.
So he scored touchdowns of 2, 7, 8, 13, 51, 51, 52, and 57 yards. So it was nice to see that DJ Moore can score touchdowns from more than 50 yards away.
Yeah.
He should broke do that out with often. 74 yard touchdown. Yeah. But yeah, I just thought it was funny that I've said something about it, because he scored a 50 yard touchdown earlier this season, right?
Yes. Yeah.
He scored a 57-yard touchdown a couple weeks ago. And I said something then where it was like DJ Moore only scores touchdowns from 50 yards away. And then he did it again this week, but he actually backed it all the way up to the own 26.
Yeah. He did that against the Falcons, didn't he?
He didn't score, though.
What, a couple weeks ago?
Oh, no. I was thinking about last year. Sorry.
Yeah, he's had a couple long runs that he did not score on. Like, he had an 80-yard catch against the Lions that he didn't score on.
Yeah, but it was against the Falcons. Some-odd-yard one this year, I thought it was against the Falcons, wasn't it, where they just refused to tackle
him? It was against the Falcons. It's 57-yard.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Falcons. The 57-yard, the one he was the fastest ball carrier in the league.
Yeah.
He's so effortlessly fast. It's really entertaining.
Yeah,
he doesn't look like he's running at all. Like, he looks like he's just jogging.
Yeah, he's got a very fluid running motion, which it makes him look like he's gliding.
Yeah, it's just we talked about it when against the Falcons. He's just jogging, and these defenders are putting in all of their effort, and they cannot catch up to him.
It's my boy DJ Moore right there.
But I feel like I'm just going to have this feeling after most Panthers games. It's nice having a season with no expectations, because I feel the same way after this game as I did after the Raiders game and the Buccaneers game, where I was like, hey, they played pretty well.
Yeah,
good job, Panthers.
It was certainly better than the last time we played the Saints.
Yeah, yes. You know, they're competitive. The Saints are a more established team, and the Panthers played them tough. And it was like, it looked like, you know what, if we, you know, add some pieces and get some more time with this coaching staff in place and stuff, it's like, oh, we could beat this team. Good.
No, go ahead.
It was like, it didn't look like other times we play the Saints where it's just like, man, it's like big brother beating up on little brother. Like, we have no shot.
Right. We did also get at least two that I can remember, classic Trey Boston moments where he was running up to make a tackle, lunges, and completely misses the ball carrier. I enjoyed those.
I'm sure you did.
I like, I like Trey Boston. I think he's underrated, but that happens so often with him.
It does.
He's more of a, I think even, we've talked about it though, that he is underrated, but I think it's more in the coverage aspect. He's a very good coverage safety.
Yes, he's a very he's not a run support strong safety tackler. No.
Yeah,
and it doesn't hurt. It doesn't help that he tries to make the SportsCenter highlight play and whiffs at least once every other game.
Yeah, there's no like square up and wrap up. It's just like go full speed at where you hope you'll be, and then hope that you make contact with him.
Yeah, the old torpedo hit.
Yeah,
kill shot.
And, I mean, honestly, and I know a lot of Panthers fans are not going to like to hear this, but to me, if he would stop doing that, he would actually be properly rated because he would be good. Like, it's the one thing that's keeping him from being a really good upper level safety. And yeah, I don't know why he can't just like, he can't help himself, but if he would stop doing that, I mean, I would gladly like to see him continue to play in Carolina until he retires, because he would be really good.
It's too late at this point. He's not going
to. Yeah. Oh no. He will never stop. Like, yeah, that's, you have to get that kind of stuff out of a guy when he's like a freshman in college. If you don't do it by then, you're never going to get it out.
Oh man. Brian Burns played well though, as always.
So he has three sacks and three, and all of them are strip sacks, right?
Yes.
Yeah. He's been a real monster. Yeah.
I saw a thing on Instagram. But he's rated like top 10 in both run like run stop win rate and pass rush win rate.
Huh, pretty good for a gunner on the punt team.
Yeah, he's like third in pass rush win rate. He hasn't gotten a lot of sacks, and I think it's just partly. I think it's mostly because of he's kind of a one man wrecking crew at this point, and he doesn't have a lot of help. But he is a menace to opposing passing, like on like every pass play.
Yeah.
Yeah. But on the other side of it too, I mean, as we all know, you don't typically get a first round rated defensive tackle who comes in and just dominates right away either. So it'll take a little bit of time for Derek Brown. Plus, not having Kaywon Short around isn't helping. And you know, I don't think that there's really anybody worth a damn opposite him on the other side of the defensive line. Like FAO
Marquise Higgins has been better than expected, but he's still not like good.
Yeah, I mean, he's a pass rush specialist and.
Yeah, we even need then, I think Gross Matos back, like, quickly.
Yeah. Because Stephen Weatherly and FAO Bot are basically the same player, so.
Yeah.
It's.
Speaking of getting players back, I feel like that's a good place to transition into, like, injury news and roster news and stuff.
Yeah, I'm tired of talking about the Saints.
Well, so Christian McCaffrey is not active, right?
He is he is designated to return from injured reserve, which is step one of the three-step process to come back.
Okay, and then he has 3 weeks to be actually activated.
Yes, they have 3 weeks to officially activate him, and he can now practice. Like, he couldn't practice until they designated him for return.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he could be at practice, he just couldn't participate.
I'd imagine
but now
that.
Now he can do that.
I'd imagine that we're looking at next week as the target return. I don't expect them to do it this
week.
Yeah,
I know Matt Rhule is saying he would like to see him play Thursday night, but that's a mistake. Like, they just need to wait. We'll get into that more later in the show, but I don't think they should activate him yet. I think he needs that 10 extra days.
It certainly would be weird timing to activate a player after a long layoff for a Thursday night game.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, just because it's just kind of like, it's like when teams have bye weeks, like players never come back from like a 5 week injury and then play one game and then go to the bye week. It's just, I don't know. I think it's just something psychological about people liking the idea of like, oh, you're going to get a bunch of time off after this. Might as well just wait for that.
Yeah. And I mean, they have a roster spot for this. Like, they can activate him now if they want because of releasing Seth Roberts.
And so, Eli Apple.
So they do have roster spots if they want to put him on the roster. But what I would do is I would just go ahead and put him on the roster, but just not activate him for the game. Like, I would just, you know, like, you're not going to play Thursday night. you're back on the roster, but we're going to keep you out another week.
Yeah.
But that's just what I would do. But I fully expect him to play Thursday night.
I mean,
because it's Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. From a fan perspective, I want him to play just because it's more fun to watch the Panthers when he plays.
Yes, I agree. But from a build for the future type thing, I don't think they should, unless let me put my troll hat on. Hold on just a second. Unless they want to showcase him Thursday night for a trade.
Oh, because trade deadline's coming up.
The trade deadline is next week. Next Tuesday.
Yeah, show everybody he's healthy.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, what better way to show him off than against the Falcons, you know?
if he plays against the Falcons, there are a few teams to play that would inflate the stock of an offensive player like playing the Falcons.
Hey, he could rush for 200 yards, and we could convince the Jets to trade their first rounder for him, and we could have the number one overall pick, and then whatever we end up with.
I mean, they got to replace Le'Veon Bell, so I think it makes
sense. They do have to replace Le'Veon Bell, so it makes sense.
I want to talk real quick about Eli Apple.
I do too. I'm glad you do.
I feel like there has to be something with him, like, as a person, right? That's the reason for him getting released.
Well, I mean, he also hasn't really played much because of his hamstring injury, and I don't think he played super well on Sunday.
Yeah, but I mean, he was called a locker room cancer by one of his previous teams.
And it was Landon Collins, who has a reputation as being like a very leader, like a, you know,
yeah,
big
yeah,
time
it wasn't,
leader.
It wasn't like Vontaze Burfict said it.
Yeah.
Like, it was a respected player in the league yeah. that said it. And there's also, if I remember right, he's the one that his mom was like mm-hmm. his agent or something like that. And there
I know
was a
she's
big
very involved
with
people.
Yeah, she's very involved in his yeah. in his career.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I know in our Slack group, Eric has a theory that he isn't really hurt and he's just milking a payday. And his teammates can kind of sniff that out. And once they sniff it out, it, you know, it's pretty much over because they know that you're not dependable. Because yeah. there has to be something else to this story. You don't go to your coach or your position coach and be like, hey coach, I think I need to sit out the rest of practice on a short week, mind you, because they play tomorrow. Yeah. If you're listening to this when it
wait, hold on. So he did that?
He went to his coaches during practice and said he needed to sit out the rest of practice because his hamstring was bothering him and he didn't think he could go. And now this is according to Joe Person of The Athletic. I have no reason to believe Joe would make this up because Joe is actually a good reporter. I know a lot of people don't like to hear that, but he is. And I just you don't say that to your coach. You're like, hey, coach, my hamstrings bother me. I don't think I can practice. And the response is, OK, well, you're not on the roster anymore. Like
yeah,
that
you don't just do that to
how
players.
That goes.
Yeah, you don't do that with players, even if they aren't playing well.
Yeah, like if it's like the 90th guy on the roster in training camp. Yeah, okay, I get it. But you signed him in the off season to a 1-year deal for what was it, $3 million?
Yeah, something
or
like
$4 million,
something
like
that. Yeah, something that is. Real money, like not a
yeah. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was. I'll have to look it up. But it was an actual deal. Like it wasn't the league minimum or anything like that. And you don't cut those guys just because they say their hamstring is bothering them.
Yeah.
At practice on a short week, like if it were like the day before the Super Bowl, I get it. Because you know what difference does it make? But like. I don't know. Yes, it was a 1-year, $3 million deal.
Yeah,
with
so like
$750,000 guaranteed.
Yeah, so like the whole confluence of things where, given his history, where obviously the whole thing with the Giants, and the Saints traded for him, and then they immediately, or they very quickly decided to not exercise the fifth-year option on him as a first-round pick and then let him walk. And then nobody really wanted him because we signed him really late in free agency.
His whole contract went dead, too, when he got cut. So it wasn't like they saved a whole lot from cutting him. So, yeah, I agree. There might be more to this story.
And he then was a top 10 pick, wasn't he? Didn't they draft him, 10th overall?
Yeah, he was 10th. But yeah, so, like, for one, it's weird to cut anybody on a Tuesday, especially when it's, like, halfway through the week since there's a game on Thursday. And then I wonder if it's just, like, one of those things where it's, like, his injuries this year have all been very nonspecific.
Yeah.
That I can tell. Like, there hasn't been, like, oh, he sprained his ankle.
Yeah, like, it's always been on the injury report. It's always been ankle / hamstring.
Yeah, it seemed – because he's never – and, I mean, obviously we don't get everything reported, especially for non-major players. But, like, there hasn't been anything reported as to, like, oh, Eli Apple landed funny making a tackle or something and he's going to go get an MRI on his foot. It's just kind of like – it sounds like, oh, Eli Apple, his foot, it hurts. Or his ankle is bothering him. And the fact that, like, I think it's been different, too. It's like both of his hamstrings and, like, both of his ankles have been the cause for problems at this point in the season already. To where it just seems
it just sounds like the classic my grandma died excuse. Like, like, how many injuries can you have? And I mean, it could all be genuine. He could really have hamstrings made out of paper mache, but I'm not, something's up. And the other thing is, look at our cornerback depth chart and justify cutting a corner that's a veteran. Mm-hmm. That's has experience. No matter how good or bad he is, he knows what he's doing on the field against an NFL offense. How do you justify cutting a guy when we are playing rookies or cast-offs? Our best corner is Rasul Douglas, and he's on the COVID reserve list, so he can't even play. We're starting a rookie. And then Dante Jackson, if he looks at his foot, he will get hurt. And the other guy we have is, I don't even remember his name.
Stanley Thomas Oliver.
Stanley Thomas Oliver. And then we have Sam Franklin. And then we have Miles Hartsfield, who, by the way, was the third string running back last Sunday, even though he's listed as a defensive back. I love that, too. I hope they keep doing that. Side note, Matt Rhule, Shaq Thompson played running back in college. Give him the ball. But anyway, you don't just cut a guy when you don't have anybody else. And it's not like they can get a replacement on Tuesday when they play on Thursday, because they have to pass all the COVID protocols. It takes 5 days to get somebody on your roster. So, like, we can't have a replacement until next week at the earliest. So, you know, something.
It very much seems like a culture thing.
Yeah. I think he wanted to send a message.
Yeah. Kind of the same thing with Seth Roberts getting released. It's both of those signings seem to point to, like, hey guys, this is what we're doing here. Not that Seth Roberts has anything questionable like we have with Eli Apple. It just wasn't like, hey,
playing that great. He ran the wrong route. Yeah. And he was in the unfortunate situation of being a player in the one position on the team we have the most depth at. Because we still have five receivers on the roster and we have one on the practice squad that can be brought up at any moment. So, you know, they can afford to cut a wide receiver. Like, we weren't using him that much anyway. He only had, what, 7 catches or 4 catches?
Something like that.
And I think it was 4 catches, and he's been in all 7 games. So he's not exactly getting targets. But with this Eli Apple thing, it's just it's got to be something other than he's hurt.
Yeah.
Unless he's legitimately hurt, and their thinking is, well, he's not worth putting on injured reserve again.
Yeah, that's the thing, is if it was an injury thing, they could just put him on. It seems like a juicy story, and juicy stories are fun, but I don't think anything else is going to come out of it, because it is a very inconsequential player.
Nobody cares. Like the only thing, only reason people care is because they did it on a Tuesday before a Thursday night game.
Yeah.
Like if they would have waited until Friday, nobody would give a shit.
No. Yeah. If they, yeah. That's why I think it's like a, oh yeah, more interesting story. Cause they could have easily just been like, all right, Eli's inactive Thursday. And then Friday we're doing some roster stuff and we just happened to let him go.
Yeah. Yeah. We cut another cornerback too off the practice squad. Josh Hawkins, I think, is the guy's name.
He's been on and off the roster for a couple of years.
He got caught dancing at a club without a mask on or something like that. And so that's why he was released, which makes perfect sense.
Interesting. Yeah.
Especially when we've gone through our quote-unquote COVID week for the last 10 days, and you're dumb enough to do that. So
I want to know who was like aware enough to be like, hey, man, that's Josh Hawkins, practice squad defensive back for the Carolina Panthers.
Exactly. I don't understand. Because, I mean, it's not like it was Cam or Teddy Bridgewater or Christian McCaffrey or Luke Kuechly. I cover this team. I get paid a sum of money every month to cover this football team. You could line up five guys in front of me and all five of them could say, hey, I'm Josh Hawkins, cornerback of the Carolina Panthers. And I would believe every single one of them. I have no idea what the guy looks like. So I don't know. Like you said, I don't know how anybody picked him out of the club.
Snapchat, buddy.
I guess.
Yeah, that's how everybody gets caught doing stupid shit like that.
Of all the stupid ways to get cut from an NFL team, that has to be up there.
Yeah.
Fucking dumbass. By the way, I'm Josh Hawkins.
Cool. Welcome to the show, Josh.
All right, I want to talk about the Falcons because we have to.
Yes, we do.
Well, we're going to talk about them later, but I want to talk about this past week. So you guys remember a few weeks ago when the Falcons were on their hot streak of blowing games. I think it was probably after the Cowboys game probably after the Bears game. And we were talking about how the Falcons always find weird ways to lose. And then we said, this game against the Lions is going to be interesting because both of them are always blowing leads.
Yes, I do remember that conversation.
And how fitting is it that in reality, the Lions actually decided that the best way for them to win the game was to get behind.
Yeah.
Like, I think we joked that that would happen, whereas, like, neither team wants to be ahead in the fourth quarter. Because literally, like, no, let them score a touchdown and take the lead. That is our best chance to win, is to let them score and take the lead late in the fourth quarter.
Watching Todd Gurley try his hardest to not score a touchdown was the funniest thing that I saw all week.
The reactions too, like he's falling into the end zone and the Lions players are over there like, yeah, it's a touchdown, right? Come on, ref, give him a touchdown.
He broke the plane. There it is right there.
The Lions players are like rooting for him to have scored. And Todd Gurley, who did score, is like, dang it, man, I scored.
And then Todd, I want to interview Todd Gurley fantasy owners who are also Falcons fans.
Ooh,
oh my God. That would
because
be...
I think those are the people that have the best reaction to this whole thing. Because, you know, part of them is like, God damn it. And then the other part of them is looking at their fantasy team like, oh, cool, sweet. Because, I mean, I cannot believe that they did, like, it's the Falcons, and I know that being an Atlanta sports fan in other sports, I'm used to seeing my favorite team with a bat and a ball fail in spectacular ways. But that's even amazing and spectacular, even for the Falcons. Like, I just don't understand it.
They're a cursed fan base.
I don't generally buy into there's a curse. But I'm starting to come around to the idea that God hates Atlanta. Like, I'm starting to get there.
It's so rare for there to be a situation where a team's best chance of winning is to intentionally allow a score. And for it to happen, for the team to be on the other end of that, to be the Falcons, it's just, like, the odds of that are so small, and it's so funny that it came out. Worked out. And again, especially with it being the Lions, who are notorious for the same sort of thing. It was It could not have gone any better.
They're a lower profile version of the Falcons, is what the Lions are.
Yeah. And so it could not have gone any better. Where, like I said, just like, hey, maybe we should be behind, and then we'll win this game.
Of course, I can't remember which Falcons fan / friend of the program tweeted this, but someone said in response to what happened, they're like, I mean, it's not like it matters. Even if Gurley does take a knee and get down and not score that touchdown, the field goal that the Falcons kick after that would have doinked off the upright, traveled 100 yards and went in to the Lions uprights and counted as a field goal for the Lions.
I
think that's who it was. But I just, the visualization of that is just funny to me. I think that would have been funnier than watching Todd Gurley try his best not to score a touchdown. But what else can you say? You know, LOL Falcons. I mean,
I know.
What else can you say?
it's great. Let's see, other teams to laugh at. The Cowboys are good to laugh at. Yes. Oh, real quick on the on the Lions. Do you guys like those Falcons uniforms with the gradient red to black?
No.
Okay.
Let me rephrase. I don't like them if they wear the black pants, because it looks like they're wearing like high weight, like their pants are like up to their nipples. Yeah. But if they would wear either red or white pants with them, I think they would look okay.
I thought they were pretty cool. But I know those uniforms. He's not cool enough to wear uniforms like that. That was my only thought on that. But yeah, Cowboys. They're having a mutiny against their brand new head coach, and everybody's like, well, their offense is good, the defense is bad. I think it was just Dak Prescott is good, and everybody else is bad.
Dak Prescott should be the MVP. I mean, I don't even care that he's probably not going to play again until next year. He is the MVP of the league. The Cowboys should pay him whatever he wants. Jerry Jones should just sign a check, write his name on it, and leave the money amount blank and let him fill it out.
You guys know how many passing yards the Cowboys had against Washington on Sunday?
I don't.
Probably not a lot.
59.
My That's goodness.
Not ideal.
Double digits, 59 yards.
And I don't know when it happened because I just saw the highlight, but get well soon, Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
Good God almighty, he took a fucking shot.
He got rocked big time.
That dude almost knocked the red out of his hair. That's how hard he hit him. And, I mean, God damn. I actually felt sorry for him. That's how hard he got hit. That was brutal.
It was very brutal.
And there's two things. One, they're saying he's not going to get suspended because he got ejected from the game. So that tells me that it must have been in the first half.
It's like the college targeting rule.
Yeah, like the college targeting thing. I don't know when it happened. But two, and you alluded to this a minute ago, John, when you said we've got a mutiny on their coach. Did you notice that not a single Cowboys player got in that dude's face?
I didn't notice that at the time, but I've heard people have been talking about that a lot.
Yeah, John Bostic almost killed Andy Dalton. he almost knocked his head clean off, and not a single Cowboys player got in his face, pushed him. Nothing. I believe, and I know we're a young team, but I believe if somebody did that to Teddy Bridgewater, I think that somebody would get ejected from our side.
Oh, like, yeah, 100%.
Alabama or somebody like that would just start throwing hands.
And it's funny because I don't think it's anything. I don't think it's an indictment on Andy Dalton at all. I think it just shows how much that team has just completely quit on everything.
That's what I was going to say. I think, like you said, they don't give a shit anymore. And
it's a new era and people, they're already like, yeah, I'm over this.
Yeah. I don't see any, I mean, I don't think Jerry Jones is going to admit a mistake, but I don't see any future with Mike McCarthy there. Like, it's just going to keep getting worse. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like Aaron Rodgers knew what he was talking about.
It's funny. It's kind of weird how when Twitter was shitting all over the Cowboys for signing Mike McCarthy, that it turned out to be true.
Yeah. Huh.
And it's a good thing that they hired him before we hired Matt Rhule. So that fear was completely gone. Because, I mean, he could be our coach right now. Just imagine how soul-sucking doing this would be if we had to watch a Mike McCarthy team every week.
Oh, I know. I remember I was very upset when there were like the rumors that the Panthers had interest in Mike McCarthy. I was like, oh no, please don't do that to us.
I was very much in the same boat, and I was all over Dallas Cowboys blogging the boys' Twitter, because after they signed him, I was just like, phew, thank God.
You took that choice away from David Tepper, and now he has to go hire someone either unproven or someone not named Mike McCarthy.
After we were rumored to be interested in Mike McCarthy, I think we could have hired anybody, and I would have been at the worst. My reaction would have been, at least it's not Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, like we could have hired like Marvin Lewis or somebody like that, and I would have been like, well, it's not Mike McCarthy. Because, I mean, I was legitimately, I was afraid we were going to hire him.
Yes, I was too. And then we got Ben DiNucci, by the way. Ben DiNucci came in, attempted 3 passes, and got sacked 3 times.
Oh.
So 6 pass plays in the game. Literally half of them, he was sacked.
I will say credit to the Washington football team, because even though they're not a very good team, they have a fucking good defensive line. Like,
that's Ron Rivera's specialty. So, I mean.
Yeah. They were already kind of building one, though. Like, they had some solid pieces to begin with, but you put Ron Rivera in there, and he's gonna make those. That's the one thing that Ron Rivera can definitely do with any team, is if you give him enough quality pass rushers, they're gonna be a fucking force when it comes to getting after the passer.
Yeah, I mean, they drafted Chase Young too, so I mean, they're stacked on the other side of the ball. No, that's not fair at all. While we're on the subject of Ron Rivera, and before we get to the Falcons, I just want to give Ron some kudos. He underwent his final cancer treatment on Monday, and if you haven't seen it yet, the Washington football team shared a video of him leaving the treatment center and ringing the bell. And if you're not familiar with cancer treatment, they let you ring a bell as your victory bell to show that you have completed your treatment journey. And Ron Rivera got to do that on Monday. So, you know, continue the fight, you know, keep pounding, all that good stuff, good vibes and thoughts and all that to Ron Rivera. Because like we said when he was diagnosed, I don't dislike Ron Rivera, the person. I just didn't like Ron Rivera, the football coach. So, you know, all the best to Ron.
Yes.
Yes, very much so. He, one of the best overall people in the NFL, bar none.
Yes.
I have 2 real quick things. Well, one is more I want to ask you guys about it, but the 49ers lost another running back.
They sure did.
Sprained ankle.
As a proud Jerick McKinnon owner, I was unfortunately happy about that.
So, for injuries.
Can you repeat that? You cut out a lot.
No. I said, wow, way to go. Way to root for injuries. Real admirable.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, so I had a little fun today. If you go to twitter.com and think staff, and apparently every single 49ers fan thinks it's their training staff's fault.
Oh.
That's really funny.
And well, we joke about it because whenever the Panthers have more than like one injury in a week, the whole fan base is like, we need to get a new training staff, which previously we had a pretty strong case for that. But
to be fair, ever since Ryan Vermilion left, have you noticed that we haven't been dealing with a bunch of bullshit like we used to?
No, I know.
You know, knock on wood. But
we had a compelling case because we had so many re-injuries and stuff. But yeah, in general, like the 49ers, like their running backs are getting hurt because they're like spraining their ankle.
Yeah,
which isn't really the training staff's fault.
Yeah, the only time I feel like you can like question the training staff and the strength and conditioning staff is if you have a bunch of soft tissue injuries where like players are all like the Eagles, I think, have this issue where they have a lot of players that are like out with hamstring injuries and stuff. Then you can be like, all right, what are we doing? But if your players are like twisted, are getting their ankles rolled up on, you can't be like, what are we doing? We're not preparing their ankles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a guy with some tape.
Yeah.
This is probably common sense to you guys, but obviously anybody listening who doesn't understand a NFL offseason, part of the reason why there's so many injuries like that happening is because people's bodies are not accustomed to this kind of punishment. And it shows because they haven't, they didn't really have a real offseason. That's why if you ever played football and they made you do those double practices for like 2 or 3 days of the week, depending on where you're at in the country, sometimes it was an entire week. That's why your legs felt like they're going to fall off for the next like several days afterwards, because that's what they're doing, is conditioning your body to take punishment.
Yeah, so, and there's not really any way you can
shut up.
You can't really condition anybody to like, hey, make sure if like a player lands on the back of their leg, they don't break their ankle. Like really, really strengthen up those fibulas. You can't really do anything about that, because that's what happened. That's what's happened.
Drink more milk.
It's just kind of at the mercy of luck there. But I thought that was funny. Last thing, Antonio Brown's in the division now.
Oh fuck! Yes. I forgot about that. That's
and wasn't there some buzz that like Bruce Arians was like, I don't want him on the team, but I mean, as long as he acts right, okay, whatever.
I don't know what Bruce Arians said recently about Antonio Brown, but I do remember in the offseason there were whispers of Brady trying to get Brown because Brady and Brown apparently are like friends or something. And Bruce Arians categorically said he does not fit our culture.
Yep. Like, yeah, he was very like demonstratively against Antonio Brown in the offseason.
Yeah, and now they're coming out and saying that Tom Brady isn't the reason they signed Antonio Brown. Like, yes. Okay, sure.
Very believable. It was all entirely Bruce Arians.
Pulled that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel like it's not a good idea. Like they're not struggling with wide receivers. I mean, Chris Godwin's hurt again, but
Mike Evans has been hurt a lot too.
They both
have been dealing with like leg injuries.
Godwin's out because he broke his finger on Sunday.
That sucks.
But Antonio Brown has just gone in and like destroyed teams from the inside. They start to benefit from.
Yeah, I don't think the Raiders recovered last year at all from having Antonio Brown on their roster, and he wasn't even there that long.
I know.
he was there like 3 days.
Yeah, and then the Patriots had him for exactly like one. He played one game for the Patriots, and they're like, nope, see ya. And then now what, the Buccaneers are like, you know what? I think he's changed for real this time. For real.
Yeah, and that should tell you how toxic he is, because if Bill Belichick doesn't want you when you're clearly as talented as he is, there's something wrong.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's that to deal with. But that's all I had. We're running long, so we need to...
Let's take a break real quick, and then we'll break down the Falcons and Panthers on Thursday. See you in a little bit.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
And welcome back. Let's talk Falcons-Panthers Thursday Night Football, which is probably going to be ugly just because Thursday Night Football is always ugly. And it's also the Falcons.
Though. Yeah, I don't know if the NFL anticipated the Falcons being this bad, before they scheduled this game.
Oh no, definitely not.
Because they're probably just like, oh, okay, we'll put the Falcons on Thursday night with an up and coming Panthers team, and this will be a good hard fought NFC South game.
This will put a divisional matchup. So like, cause the Panthers are supposed to be awful, and every team's guaranteed one primetime game. So it's like we can
make
sneak
it a
on the Panthers. It's divisional. It's got some interest. The Falcons.
Yeah, and our marketing can just be like, at least it's not the Titans and the Jaguars.
It's true. That is
Which
true.
Their marketing is going to have themselves a struggle this weekend.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you know what the rest of the primetime slate is, but it's heavily. There's a lot of NFC East in it.
Yeah.
Oh, God. You remember hearing about that?
There was Eagles Cowboys on Sunday night.
I think it is, yeah.
There was a Yahoo poll where it said, what should the NFL do with the Cowboys-Giants games? And all four of the choices were, please flex it.
Flex it. I don't care if it's too close to game day. It's a COVID season. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, flex a different game to the same time so fans can choose which one they want to watch.
I like that idea.
Yeah. Well,
like give us Ravens Steelers on Sunday night instead.
That would be the game people would watch 100%. Yeah. So major difference going into this game, Julio will probably play.
Apparently he was really looking forward to facing off against Eli Apple.
That was another thing with Eli Apple.
That might be why we cut him, because Matt Rhule might have been like, nah, fuck that.
I thought, very odd for an opposing player to just be like, man, I cannot wait to play Eli Apple. Just you wait.
Yeah, I guess he was referencing the fact that he used to play for the Saints or some shit. I don't know, but
yes,
that was
exactly what he was referencing.
That was probably probably him just like licking his chops and being like, I'm going to put up 300 yards against Carolina again.
Probably.
So that's not good. But, I mean, it is the Falcons, so the Panthers obviously have a very good chance of winning this game. And it's in Carolina this time, too, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's also supposed to rain.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
The weather is supposed to be really shitty on Thursday night. It's supposed to pour down rain with, like, 20-mile-per-hour winds.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they will activate Christian McCaffrey then.
Yeah, so it's shaping up to be a real good Thursday night game. It's a 90% chance of rain on Thursday. But I feel like the thing with the Falcons is, as always, like on paper, you look at them and you're like, oh man, that's going to be tough. But then they're 1-6 and they lose to everybody and they're awful. So it's like, I don't really know what to think. Because it still feels irresponsible to be like, oh, the Falcons are trash. We don't have to worry about them. Because they still have Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley and Todd Gurley and a few players on defense. It's just like,
yeah, I mean,
they should be good.
Trash is precisely why I'm worried about it, because the Panthers Falcons game always defies expectations. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter which team is good and which team is bad. The team that should win in this rivalry usually doesn't.
Yeah.
Last time we played them was an exception, but we barely beat them. Like, we only beat them by a touchdown.
And so, yeah, and Matt Ryan literally handed us the game. So,
yes.
The end.
Classic
so
Falcons.
Anything can happen.
The one variable here to also think about is that Dan Quinn is no longer there.
Yes.
That throws everything for a loop.
That is a point in their favor.
Yeah. Because now they're unpredictable.
Yeah. Well, because they still have Dirk Cutter and Raheem Morris is the interim. So they're probably more predictable now than they already were. Offense.
They got their big, like, new coach fired up game when they destroyed the Vikings. So I don't know. Like, they just blew a game to the Lions. So I don't know if we can worry about the coaching anymore.
Well, the one thing about the Lions, too, is that they actually have played most of their games fairly close this year, so they actually might be decent. So we'll have to see. I don't know. I'm kind of fully prepared for just like a real shit show of a game where the Panthers like once again probably should have won but don't.
Yeah, that's what I'm expecting too.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I think there's gonna be a lot of points, and I feel like it's gonna be those games like kind of college football-y where it's just more about who turns the ball over as opposed to who can get stops, because neither of them are gonna get stops consistently.
Yeah.
And so it's especially if the weather is bad.
The weather is going to be the biggest factor, and I think we're going to be tired of watching this game by the middle of the third quarter. We're going to be like it's the fourth preseason game. Like, can we just go home?
I want to see how Teddy Two Gloves handles the rain, because those gloves do not work when the ball is wet. Like,
and see, I was kind of hoping he just takes them off when it rains. Like he's only Teddy Two Gloves when the weather's nice.
Well. Like, those gloves, I don't know if you guys have ever – Brian might have some experience, but, like, the way the receiver gloves are now, like, if they're wet, it's like having, like, grease on your hands. Like, you can't even hold a football if the gloves are wet.
Catching a football with really wet gloves is very difficult. Like, you can get away with it in, like, you know, like, maybe, like, light rain, because you can find a way to dry them off or whatever, but, like, the way you keep them – the way that you typically like get them to be like sticky again is to just like spit on them and then like wipe them off and dry them. And when you're playing in the rain, yeah, it's like, it's really difficult to catch a football that way. That's why you see so many people take the gloves off in heavy rain.
Yeah. Like, so like, I play flag football with people, and a lot of our people on our team have gloves, and it's funny because when we play at night and it gets wet outside, if the ball like lands in the grass, like people struggle to even just like pick the ball up off the grass with the wet ball and the wet gloves, because it gets they're so slippery. So we might see Teddy's hands on Thursday night.
Why does he even wear the gloves? Like, is it to compensate for smaller than standard like quarterback hands?
Know.
Like, it gives him extra tackiness so he can grip the ball better? Or
I'm sure Google has an answer for that, so let me look it up real quick.
Bridgewater wear gloves.
It was one of the sorry,
but like he probably just, I don't know, probably grew to like how it feels, because for me it feels weird just not having like contact with the ball, but I could see where it might be appealing to some people, because since the gloves are tacky, you can really get some spin on it if you're used to it. So it might just be that, get a little extra grip on it.
Apparently, to appease the scouts, on his pro day, he did not wear gloves because people were worried about that, and it was really
NFL
bad.
People are so weird.
Yeah.
If you always wear gloves, it probably feels weird to not wear gloves, because I know, like, for me, if I try to throw a football with gloves on, it's awkward, but I can see where people might like it, because you do get good grip on it, and you can kind of spin it a little bit more.
Hang on, let me do a little bit of draft Twitter scouting here.
How did you guys preview the Falcons game? Oh, we talked about Teddy Bridgewater and football gloves and rain.
His hand size is 9 1/4 inch.
That's acceptable.
It's acceptable. He's in the 25th percentile. So he has tiny hands, and that's why he wears gloves. That's my draft Twitter profile of Teddy Bridgewater.
That's honestly probably how a lot of scouts come up with their scouting reports.
Probably, yeah.
Well, I mean, apparently he talked to Kurt Warner, who wore gloves throughout most of his career, and Kurt Warner suggested he keep wearing them, so seems to have worked out for him. So I guess for a quarterback as seasoned as him, you know, I would think that he knows how to play in the rain with gloves. So
I mean, I kind of hope it turns into a greased watermelon out there, just because it would be funny.
Just ball popping all over. What if we get like a Jaguars game on Thursday night, like when we played in 2011?
Yeah.
They're just sloshing around in puddles everywhere.
Yes, I'm hoping for that.
I feel like it gets to a point where like the rain is annoying, because it kind of degrades the entertainment value of it when the players just keep messing up uncontested because of the weather. But I think if it rains enough, it becomes entertaining again, because they just can't play football anymore.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for, because this game doesn't matter. It's COVID year. It's a rebuilding year. The Falcons are terrible. We're decent. So bring on the rain.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, no expectations. Everything is just entertainment.
Yes.
So whatever is the most entertaining, that's what we're rooting for.
Maybe we'll get stripped Zach City. Like Brian Burns will have like three and the Falcons defense will have a few too.
Yeah, I would be surprised.
That would be nice.
Matt Ryan seems like a small hands guy. Does he have small hands?
I think he's got relatively normal hands for a quarterback.
Matt Ryan.
I don't think he'd have gotten drafted third overall if he had tiny hands. Because that's how scouting is.
Let's see. I will look that up because I care.
My guess is like 10 to 10.
9.5 inches.
9.5, yeah.
Wow.
Look at
how far we've come, guys. We're talking about quarterback hand size.
Drew Brees has 10.25 inch hands.
Yeah, Russell Wilson.
His hands
also
are
so
big.
Does Russell Wilson.
Yeah, short guys with big hands. But I know we've kind of devolved in this conversation, but it's so hard to preview Panthers games this year. I think we're still kind of learning how things go, and then the Falcons add to that because the Falcons are just a train wreck.
Just because I feel like it, who do you think has the largest hand size that's ever been measured by the NFL Combine?
Ryan Mallett.
No.
Julius Peppers?
No, quarterback. Oh, wait, we're
doing quarterbacks?
Oh, quarterback. Oh, okay.
You're not going to get it.
Is it a player we've heard of?
Maybe.
Well, that's tough. That's tough.
I don't know. Brock Osweiler?
Jim Drunken Miller.
Nope. Okay. Never. Is his last name Drunken Miller, or is Drunken like his middle name?
Drunken Miller is his last name. Drunken Miller.
What an amazing last name.
Yes. He was terrible quarterback too. He's like Brock Osweiler bad. 11.25 inch hands.
That's wild. Probably his hands are probably too big. Can't even hold the ball.
The next closest was Dak Prescott at 10.8.
I didn't realize Dak had such big hands.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good hand size talk.
Yeah. Hey, you never know what you're going to get on Keep Sounding.
Yep. That's true. That's true. Do we want to do scoring predictions?
Yes.
We can try.
I know we nailed it every week this year. So.
Yes.
All right, John, go ahead.
Let's see. Panthers 34, Falcons 32. I don't know.
Okay.
Oh. Go ahead, Brad. Go ahead, Brad. I have one more thing, but you go first.
I'm going to say Panthers 33 because we'll have to kick field goals. Falcons 30.
All right.
This is going to be a shootout in the rain.
I'll go with Panthers 24, Falcons 14, because the Panthers can't seem to really break 24 points for some reason.
Yeah, but they weren't playing the Falcons, so.
True. What'd you have to add?
Panthers debuting the black uniforms on Thursday.
Yes.
Ooh.
Well, right. The black jerseys. They haven't. Have they come out and said?
No, they haven't said anything about the pants, okay. But.
Yeah, they're at least wearing the black jerseys, but they should wear all black.
Yeah, I think
because it's Thursday night.
Yeah, it's color rush, man.
Yeah, they should switch. Like the blue should be the primary home, and then the black should be the two or three games a year special thing, just because it stands out more when you don't see it that often.
Yeah, definitely. Like I saw the black is on the uniform schedule, and I got a little excited.
Yeah.
Get the all and then black all black does it hits different in prime time than it does on like
it
a 1 o'clock game.
And it looks better since they made the subtle changes to the uniform. It looks better now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the all black jerseys are fun.
Of the program.
Yes.
We talked about hand size, we talked about gloves, now we're talking about fashion. Where are you gonna get that? Where else do you get that versatility?
We're gonna see Teddy two gloves with all black jersey and white gloves. That's my prediction.
That's how you make the gloves really pop, though.
Yep. He also apparently changes them throughout the game, so it'd be kind of funny if he changed the gloves three times and they were all different colors. I think that'd be pretty funny.
He needs to start doing the thing that people start, especially in soccer, where the gloves are different colors.
Yeah.
Like he has a white glove and a blue glove.
That would be there cool.
One last thing while we're talking about gloves just before we end the show, but I was listening to the Pat McAfee show the other day, and I heard something funny about from Mike Adams, if you guys remember him. He's probably, what, like 42 now?
57, yeah.
Yeah, 57. Apparently he used to wear gloves that were the other team's colors to try and because it made it harder for the referees to see if he was holding. And I thought
that's
that
actually
was
pretty smart.
Brilliant. Yeah, I thought that was absolutely brilliant, and I think that every defensive back should do that because
yeah, that's actually pretty smart.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, no, I never noticed it either.
I never looked, you know, I never paid that much attention to his gloves, but
I think there's a limit to that because the NFL won't let you wear like red gloves.
Yeah, no,
in black or white, he can wear that color glove.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe he usually matched it with the neutral color that the other team had.
Yeah.
But I thought it was funny because the only reason Pat McAfee even found out was because he saw what he was wearing in practice. He was like, oh, those are really cool gloves. Where'd you get those? And he was like, trade secret, buddy. And yeah, so Mike Adams is pretty smart. And that's my suggestion for the Panthers is to do stuff like that. Cause that's crafty.
So the Falcons were white, all the receivers or all the DBs need to wear white gloves.
Exactly. Yes. And if they can, they should wear white sleeves too, if it's raining.
Yes. Yeah. You can't even tell apart the Panthers' arms from the Falcons' arms.
Yeah. You just see a guy get blatantly thrown to the ground and the referee is like, I don't know. I didn't see it.
I could tell it was his own arms. I didn't know.
Oh man. But, yeah. So one
other question prediction, sure. instead of just doing the score, cause we should have fun with this cause it's Thursday night, assuming the weather report is accurate and it is pouring down rain and it's 20 mph winds, how many turnovers do you think we'll see like total for both teams?
Five.
I'll go with three.
Okay, I was gonna say four. So,
I say like one interception per team, maybe two for one of them, and then like two or three fumbles.
Yeah, I think we're gonna see at least one strip sack. I think Burns will probably get one, and then I think that Teddy will get the ball knocked out of his hand at least once too. And I think one of them will throw a pick, and then a running back or a wide out's going to fumble a ball. Like after he catches it and tries to make a football move, the ball's just going to squirt out of his hands. I think we're going to see that.
Should be fun.
Yeah.
I'm not watching. Looking forward to this game.
No, I think I'm not either.
I feel like I could be wrong, but I feel like you're more not looking forward to the fact 7:30 or 12. Especially.
That?
I feel like for Brad at least, and maybe you too, the bigger concern is that the game's going to end at like 11:30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if it is sloppy, and there's lots of difficulty passes to turn them.
I like watching Panthers Falcons because it's always a shit show, but I'd never watch Thursday night football anymore because it's so long. And I mean, the game starts at like 8:30, so it's a 4-hour game. Like it's gonna be 1 o'clock before I get to bed, and that's just not enough sleep. Like I need my sleep.
At least it's Friday after the game. You only got to deal with sleep deprivation for one day.
That's true. I'm kind of hoping that the game is like over by the middle of the third quarter. Either way, so I can just kind of like half-ass it. But
I've done that for Hornets games where like it gets a blowout and you just like you write the whole recap and then you just wait for the game to end and you just hit publish and call it a night.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. And I'm willing to sacrifice losing to the Falcons just so I can do that. And yeah, you can't do that because no lead is safe for the Falcons. Like it could be like 42-10 in the third quarter and they'll find a way to lose. So
yeah, that's the worst part about Thursday Night Football against the Falcons is that you can't quit on the game until the very last second. You just can't. They find new and creative ways to blow leads, and
I'm hoping that because of the rain, that both teams just try to ground and pound the shit out of it because they can't throw, and the clock never really stops.
It's kind of what happened in this game, the game on Sunday.
Because yeah, I mean, Saints I was done with the post-game recap at like 15 till 4.
Yeah, like, I remember it was halftime. It was halftime at like 2. Or like yeah. 2 something. Yeah.
Like, Drew Brees isn't wasting any time.
I know.
Maybe the Falcons will be smart now. Like I had said before, they just kind of like let off the gas of Todd Gurley, even though it was clearly working against the Panthers. Maybe the rain will force them just to lean on him.
Yeah.
Which is what they totally should do.
Exactly.
Well, do we have anything else we want to share tonight?
Nope.
All right. Well, from all of us here at the Keep Sounding Podcast, this is Brad and John and Brian. We'll be here for you on Thursday night. Hopefully it doesn't go too long, but I'll be on Twitter breaking down the game. Check out everything pre and post game on catscratchreader.com. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. And we will be with you next week and maybe do the B&B reaction show sometime this weekend. But regardless, we'll be with you at some point in the future. So anyway, stay safe, stay healthy. We'll talk to you soon.
See you guys.
Later.